Thank you, Carl. Great to be here with everybody. Happy Pride. It is that month. I want to start out by sharing with you, there's a wonderful book that we may have talked about here before by Thich Nhat Hanh. Came out late last year, so clearly it was a collection of his thoughts and not written by him, but it's called Zen and the Art of Saving the Planet. And the piece that I want to read you, just a little couple sentences of, is Reclaim Your Agency. Zen Master Linji declared that we must not be a victim of our surroundings. We must keep our freedom, even when things around us do not go as we wish. It is our responsibility to be the master of the situation and to make use of whatever situation we are in to awaken. Wherever you are, you can be sovereign of yourself. An active person always says, what can I do? What can we do to keep the situation from getting worse and to help it improve? How can I help another person or people to change? When we get angry, the seat of our anger in the depths of our consciousness comes up, and our mind tells us that we're suffering because of that person or that situation. But as soon as we practice conscious breathing and recognize and embracing our anger, our mind begins to restore our sovereignty, and we declare, I don't want to be a victim of my anger. I want to be myself. I want to initiate change. In this way, meditation becomes a kind of practice that restores and develops your free will. And so the reason that I wanted to share that is I was looking at social media last night when I should have been sleeping, but wasn't. And there was a transgender activist whose name I will get, but I didn't catch because it was the middle of the night, who said that her one wish for this Pride season was that we could get people to stop using little expressions, quaint little expressions like love is love is love, or love equals love. And she said what she would rather have us all do who are concerned about our communities, our lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and plus communities, is to start using the expression that, for instance, transgender people, particularly youth and women of color, are in clear and present and unrelenting danger. And I was just sat up in bed and thought about it. And you know, it was really powerful for me. The country, as we know, we've talked about here and other places, has 250 separate pieces of regressive, hateful, dangerous legislation floating around, much of it likely to pass, unfortunately. And the goal of that legislation, at its most basic level, is to make us all invisible, to have us go back to being invisible, to have us disappear from the main stage of American life or the globe's life. And, you know, the impact of being made invisible is really, really clear to all of us. You know, for starters, we come to this spiritual practice because it's a place of presence. You know, Sharon Salzberg says that the reason she was originally attracted to this practice is the idea, the possibility of a life lived with peace, ease, and authenticity. And that authenticity is at the heart of all of our practices, our meditation practice, our compassion practice, our wisdom practice is all about becoming still enough so that we can heal and so that we can identify who we really are in this present moment. So we also know that that this being made invisible, this wishing to turn us from being fully active, fully formed spiritual people to somebody invisible and somebody that can be legislated out of existence is really, as this activist said, is really a clear and present danger. One simple example of that is, as you know, if you've read the newspapers in the last couple of days, at the Gay Pride, Gay and Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgender Pride event in Idaho, they pulled over a van with 31 armed white supremacists who were headed for that Gay Pride parade to cause destruction. And who knows how dangerous they could have been. So there's these clear examples of these white supremacist folks causing danger to us and to other communities, of course, even more so. But it's really more than that, if you think about it. It's deeper than that. Our communities know what it is to be made invisible. Some of us had the opportunity this weekend to go to see the quilt at Golden Gate Park. And there were 3,500 panels, which represent 50,000 panels that have been sewn for people who we lost to HIV. And the total is now 700,000 people in the United States have died of HIV. Those people died because the government said, we're not talking about this, it's a gay thing. The medical industry said, we're not talking about this because it's a gay thing. Many of our own families said, you know, if you weren't doing what you're doing, this wouldn't be happening, and other sorts of things of that nature. And in the intervening years and decades that people dragged their feet and didn't respond, many, many, many people died. And so I do agree that we need to stop using charming, non-offensive slogans like love equals love or happy pride. Although I did say that to you, and we can still say it when we're in closed encounters. But I think that the fact of the matter is, as this activist said, there is a clear and present, real and unrelenting danger right now. And we didn't ask for this fight necessarily. But I think we're in it. And I think most of us, many of us know on a day-to-day basis at our heart that we are in a revolution so long as people can pass legislation to silence our children, to silence their parents, and to have access our rights to family, to be in families, to be in jobs, and to be healthy. So a question that comes up for me and is, how do we fight without hating? And there's so much right now that if you read, I listened to a podcast last week called Pod Save America, and it's four young, bright people that worked in federal government and now comment on the news. And they were, most of their response to the people on the other side of the political aisle from them was name-calling and pejorative. They had some good points, but the way they framed the whole thing, it sounded to me like a group of maybe 13-year-olds without parental supervision who were just, you know, this one made this proposal, he's a moron. This one made this proposal, he's an asshole. You know, it just felt to me like, how do we actually engage in this revolution for our safety and our health and our children and our elders and everyone in between? How do we do that and not turn to anger? And I was reading a thing today from Valerie Brown, who's the Thich Nhat Hanh Dharma teacher that some of you may have had the pleasure of hearing or reading. And she says that in Plum Village practice, we learn to notice and be aware of anger when anger comes up in us, that these are seed-like emotions that we can touch, to notice the emotion, how it feels in our body, and to bring awareness to those feelings, not to get rid of them, but to know that for most of us, there is the potential to do more harm than good. So not that we shouldn't be angry, not that we shouldn't be angry at all, but that how do we look at the clear and present dangers that we're facing? And here's a paragraph from her writing. Our hearts and our supports are broken open by grief, fear, and anger. How do we fight injustice and not hate? How do we fight injustice and support ourselves and each other? How do we deepen our resolve for a more just and equitable world in an unjust and equitable world in which we live? So I think, you know, Albert Einstein once said, you cannot simultaneously prevent and prepare for war. The very prevention of war requires faith, courage, and resolution that are more faith, courage, and resolution than are needed to prepare for war. We must all do our share that we may be equal to the task of peace. And so for me, as I've been mulling all this around, as you know, this is our month of LGBTQA pride, and we have reasons to celebrate ourselves and each other and many of the accomplishments we've made in the last few decades, a really remarkable rate of change if you think about it. So I think, you know, I've been thinking about that and wondering how we live in peace and live in beauty and live in celebration and find within ourselves a way to, if you will, join the revolution and keep active in the revolution in whatever milieu that takes for us. And I think that one of the things that we can do is to acknowledge that there are things that each of us does. Being here on a Monday night and sitting for 30 minutes is 30 minutes in which there are 14 of us, 15 of us tonight. So that's 7.5 hours of time that did not add any more chaos to the world, that did not add any more anger to the world, in which our purpose was to get to know our authentic self. Who are we in this present moment? To arouse mindful awareness and say, who am I? What kind of person am I? Do I want to be? How do I want to be present in the world in a way, as Sharon said, that exists with the possibility of living a life of peace, ease, and authenticity? So, you know, we're in an LGBTQA Sangha group, Sangha, and so we are in the business of being authentic. We are queer Buddhists, and we have been for 20 years, some here for 20 years, and others have joined the 20-year tradition and expanded it and enhanced it and made it stronger. So I think that's one thing we can do, is just to acknowledge that, you know, we don't all have to go out and organize marches or file lawsuits. Both of those things important. Thank you, John. And you know, there are things that we can each do. And so this is one of them. And then I wanted to just suggest another, which is, there's a beautiful book called Bringing Zen Home, The Healing Heart of Japanese Women's Rituals. And it's by a woman named Paula Arai, A-R-A-I. It's just gorgeous. And what she says in her book is that one of the ways that we can combat the challenges of the world is by knowing, like Einstein said, you can't have prepare for war and prepare for peace at the same time. So it's not distracting yourself from the realities of the world, but it's creating alternatives. And so she suggests that one of the things that is true is that creativity and beauty are factors in the healing process. Creativity and beauty are factors in the healing process. And so what can we as individuals and as Sangha, as a community, as our various communities, what can we do? Paula suggests there are three things to really expand beauty and creativity in your world, in your families, in your relationships, in our Sangha. And she says the first thing is observing beauty. So the first of the three tenets of this ritual of creating, recognizing and creating creativity and beauty. First thing is to observe beauty. So to take the opportunity, many people yesterday when they left the quilt walked through the flower place that I'm blanking on the name of. What do you call that place? Anyway, across the street where all those pretty flowers were, and it's springtime. And so the Botanical Gardens. It's a shame to have a 71-year-old head, huh? The Botanical Gardens and the Conservatory of Flowers, both in full bloom. And so many people said, this is a reality that we live in. Many people have died of AIDS-related complications, and they died too soon, and they died invisible in many cases. And so that's powerful, and it re-energizes us to do something different in the world. And in the meantime, not as a distraction, but because we need to live in equanimity, which is, according to the Buddha, calmness based in wisdom. So we need that equanimity. So people walked across the street through the AIDS Grove and into a place filled with flowers. And other people walked out to the ocean and walked on the ocean, although that was on Saturday. On Sunday, it was a little cold for the ocean. So that's the first thing, is observe beauty. It would be the odd day and the odd place and the odd situation where we could not find something in ourselves, in our families, in our relationships, in our workplaces that didn't express beauty and didn't express creativity. And so not to ignore that, to hold the things that we need to do in the world and to hold that that beauty. Second piece is, if you don't observe any beauty, to create some. Write a poem. Send somebody a nice email, call somebody up and say some kind and beautiful words to them, take a picture. So do something that creates beauty in the world. Sew something, bake something, share some cookies with somebody in your building that needs something beautiful. And then the third thing is beauty in action. And Beauty in Action is, for those who had a chance to go on Sunday, everybody who was there was Beauty in Action. There was this gorgeous 3,500 squares of remembrance of beauty, of wild colors and poetry and so forth. And that was the beauty that we could observe. The people who put those quilts together, including some of us here, and they're still being put together, so you still can. That's creating beauty. But then the beauty in action was people walking. And if you ever wanted to see people with compassion and love, all you had to do was be on the meadow yesterday or Saturday and watch people as they observed and turned to each other, often to complete and total strangers, and just had a kind word, or even in the midst of the current epidemic that we're living in, a hug. Many people were hugging and holding hands. By the nature of being there, walking around that meadow filled with this beautiful art, there was the action of beauty in action. You yourself were the beauty in that case. So I think that really becomes something that we can do, is to think about our spiritual practice tells us to create authenticity. So to be ourselves, which means we can't be made invisible and we can't sit still while any of the rest of us are made invisible, any element of our community. So we are called to action, and some of that can be political action. Some of it can be important jobs that work towards social justice and equality and health equality and family rights. Sometimes it is this idea that the world can be a dark and scary and very dangerous place. Maybe we can all do something to say, as we do every Monday night, here's a space. Here's 1 hour where you don't have to be afraid. Here's 1 hour where you sit in meditation and you find that sacred silence in which healing happens. And then for the second half of it, we talk to each other a little bit. And so I think that I'm going to stop there and hopefully just give everybody who would like to just a couple minutes to, this is Pride Month, and we're not going to meet next week because we'll be celebrating Juneteenth. And so this is the last time we will be together before the official Pride events for the transgender community on Friday the 24th, for the women's community and for everyone on that weekend of the 25th and 26th. So the question to the group is, feel free to just unmute yourself and say a word or two about what Pride means to you in 2022 and how you're celebrating yourself and this community. So thank you, everyone. Don't be shy. Loki.
I've been going since 1973 when I was 18. Almost every year at that time, it was called Gay Freedom Day, Gay Liberation Day. It had the word freedom in it. Then it became inclusive, Gay and Lesbian Freedom Day. And then LGBT, it became more inclusive in Pride. And I love that idea of freedom. So I always say freedom and pride. It still means something to me more than just a big party and corporate sponsors. You know, it's still, and I live further away now, and I've been debating this year if I should go, because if we didn't have it, you know, there's still COVID, but I'm going to wear a mask. It means a lot to me. It's why I came here, why I came out at that time. And it was, at that time, it was this parade that went through the Tenderloin and met at the Civic Center, and everyone went off in a bus to Mark's Meadows. And it was, that was how many people there were in 1973. When I was a teenager. So it's really, you know, and this year seems real important. And a friend of mine says, I'm not going because he's afraid of the shootings. He's afraid there's going to be, you know, and it's valid. And what you said about, I watched closely that thing, those people actually, they had body armor and they were going to commit mayhem, and they had ridiculous costumes. In my opinion, they tried to look like Casper the Ghost. They were arrested and they were going to commit something terrible. And I really thought a lot whether I'm going to go this year, because like that trans activist said, there's there is, well, particularly with trans women and people of color, women of color, there's a lot of murders. I still think it's okay to wish someone happiness, that's also another part, wishing happiness and well-being for someone, like metta, you know, doesn't negate the reality of death and destruction. And just without seeming like I'm rambling, just on that one point, I sometimes have a hard time with the metta, because I'll watch the news and my heart breaks, and I'm staying, you know, aware of my Buddha nature, but at the same time, on a very personal level, when I see Ukraine or, you know, the mass shootings, yeah, all of it, just all of
thanks.
It.
Thanks, Loki. Let's try and get some other voices in too.
Okay, yeah. I just wanted to say that.
Thanks. Other folks, thoughts about what pride means to you this year? How you might be active in inside yourself or inside our communities?
I'll just quickly say, this isn't like what pride means to me, but I just happened to see a play, an aspiring playwright who's a friend had a reading of her play that is a musical yesterday. And it's about the time John Muir and Teddy Roosevelt, who are both very problematic characters in our history, but they spent 3 days mostly alone in hiking in Yosemite. And she has imagined this into a kind of an erotic eco love story. And the trees, there are trees are the chorus, play the chorus in the musical. And it was, you know, it wasn't a perfect, she's like a budding playwright and she's doing, you know, but it was so freaking beautiful. And beautiful in this moment, beautiful because it's an important message. Mm-hmm. And I won't even go into everything, but just to relate that piece about nature with love and eroticism. It was such a great piece for pride and certainly important for our time.
Yeah. Thank you. Alan?
Yeah. Being in a town that is going to have pride, but may have more quote supporters than gay people attending. I think from your speech, one of the things that comes to mind is that the need for both pride and protest never goes away. And, you know, there's a thousand things this year that we can protest yet. And I think that's one of the things that we tend to forget every year, especially in quote safe communities. But there's a whole lot of places out there still that are right back in 1967. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing to remember this year.
Thank you. Anybody else have a thought or a wish or a hope?
Well, what I would say is, since I'm on the phone a lot making reservations, I never hesitate to say, no, that's my husband, Henry. And just, I'm out. I'm a big old queer. And that's it. I you know, I wear this ridiculous sun hat that I painted myself. And I said, you know, it's like, who else but a gay man? Well, whatever. But it's like, this is it. You know, I'm me. And that's it. So I'm not going back in any closets, and I'm just, you know, I think it, you know, just being, I'm just being me without any apologies.
That's a step, important step for all of us. All right, everyone. Well, I think we are just about out of time, so we'll let Carl dedicate the merit and lead us out of here. But thank you, everybody, for listening, and hopefully we'll see many of you on Saturday when we can have a day that's really focused on the 20 years we've had together and who we are this in this year. So probably the theme for the day, as you may know, is beginning anew, which is a practice that Thich Nhat Hanh's Sangha created. And it's the opportunity, even in the midst of our 20-year run, to say, yeah, this is all good, and where to next? So thanks, everybody.
Stephen, thank you so much. So let's sit together for a minute or two, and we'll dedicate the merit.